knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men. The shadow knows.
Hi, welcome to the Cosmic Eye Show. I am your host, Jason Napolitano, and I have on the line Chris Sheridan. How you doing, buddy?
Doing great.
Good to be here. And the opening that we played, that little MP3 of The Shadow, is something Chris found. That's from a 1930s radio show, The Shadow. Cool stuff, and it's kind of leading into what we're talking about today, which is The Shadow. And speaking of The Shadow, it took us about eight or nine times to get this show to actually work. Hopefully we're not booted off by the techno shadow that's at work behind the scenes of this podcast. So like I said, today we are getting into The Shadow. That is a Jungian concept. That's a very important one when we're talking about our mental health and our spiritual health and life. So we're going to get into a bit of Robert Johnson's book, Owning Your Own Shadow. And we're also going to talk about Chris's blog post. And since I don't know the IndyCar drivers very well, and their title, what's the title of that blog post again?
Pocono Sato and IndyCar's Shadow.
All right. Thank you.
A lot of O's in that one.
Yeah. It almost sounds like something Italian.
Yeah.
Actually, Pocono. Is Pocono an Italian? One of those guys is Italian, right?
It's in, well, Sato is
somebody
Japanese,
we were talking about in there.
Pocono is, yeah, there's, you know,
no, one of the
Alfredo Fettuccine. Yeah, not anymore.
Alfredo Fettuccine. that's not offensive at all. To me.
No, not at all.
let's start the Italian stereotypes early, shall we? Oh, great stuff. All right, so that is on your website on the blog page. So that's at chrissheridan.com, and just click on the blog, and that's your latest blog post. So we're going to be pulling from that a bit, and your knowledge of IndyCar, because mine is zero, but it doesn't matter, because what we're really talking about is The Shadow. So check us out at cosmiceye.org, or at Chris Sheridan's website, chrissheridan.com, or at anchor.fm/cosmiceye. Thank you for those of you supporting us, supporting the show monetarily and listening. So if you can, please support us with a donation. There's a button on there. You can do that on our site at Anchor. And also, if you have any questions or you'd like to hear a specific topic, please drop us a line and leave us a message and tell us what you would like us to speak about. All right. So without any more, I will talk and you will talk about The Shadow. So let me read a little bit about a little beginning of this from Robert Johnson's Owning Your Own Shadow. An excellent book. I highly recommend. Chris and I have both read this many, many times. And, you know, when you're going through some challenges where stuff seems to be coming up and you can't quite get to the bottom of, you know, what's bugging you or where it's coming from, that's a good indication that it's coming from the shadow. So what is the shadow, you ask? The shadow, I'm going to read Robert Johnson. The shadow, what is this curious dark element that follows us like a saurian tail and pursues us so relentlessly in our psychological world? What role does it occupy in the modern psyche? The persona is what we would like to be and how we wish to be seen by the world. Persona is almost like the mask that we present to the world. That's me speaking and not Robert Johnson. This is Robert Johnson again. It is our psychological clothing, and it mediates between our true selves and our environment, just as our physical clothing presents an image to those we meet. The ego is what we are and know about consciously. The shadow is that part of us we fail to see or know. And the other thing I wanted to point out is Robert Johnson speaks more generally about the shadow. He points this out in a footnote. This is kind of the older idea of the shadow in Jungian thought, that it's this sort of area where certain parts of ourselves are hidden or repressed or kind of shoved down into this closet, this dark space within us that we don't know. These elements of ourselves that we don't accept, and they can be good or they can be, you know, negative qualities that need to be, you know, a lid needs to be put on them, you know, for us to live in a normal culture. But there's a difference between the shadow today in Jungian circles is more specific. It is the same sex elements of oneself that are not accepted. So so if you're a male, your shadow elements are masculine elements that are unaccepted. And the female would be the anima elements in yourself. It would be the opposite in a woman. So her unaccepted traits in herself would be her feminine elements. And that would be the shadow. That's the technical difference. We're speaking a little more generally, like the shadow in general, as a receptacle for places in ourselves that we don't accept. Do you have anything to add to that, by the way?
Well, yeah. I mean, if we want to get to general, even just the definition of the word in a colloquial sense, a shadow is something that is cast when a bright light is shining upon an object. No light, no shadow. The brighter the light, the darker the shadow that's cast. But, you know, it's interesting how that's changed in Jungian circles about this shadow. But in a general sense, it's what we can't see. Maybe it's because we choose not to see or choose not to look, or maybe it's psychologically repressed in a way that we're not even aware of. Either way, whether we know it and don't look at it, or we're just unaware because we haven't seen it yet, it's that part inside, like an iceberg. You see the tip on the surface, and then it's what's underneath the surface. And it's not our entire inner life, because there is an aspect of our inner life that we're very conscious of, that we're very aware of, that is nearer to the surface. But even within the inner life, then it's that part that we don't even want to look at when we're quiet and by ourselves, much less show it to the world. But we don't even want to show it to ourselves.
Exactly. So, exactly. I like your example of the light and shadow. And, you know, that's, I think, one of the ways that you can look at it. Of course, mainly the shadow is created because we live in culture, because we live in a specific culture and a specific sort of quote unquote civilized state, whatever that may mean. So that's going to, you know, it's going to mean different things in different cultures, what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable. Right. And so the light side, you know, quote unquote light part of us is the stuff that can be accepted, that we can show to culture, we can show to our family, we can show to our workmates and so on, that is acceptable to the general culture that we live in, basically. And then the shadow side is that stuff that falls outside of the pale of that acceptable range of behavior or thought or belief.
And so, what we find acceptable for ourselves, it's not just acceptable with society or the world out there. It's what we in our own skin find acceptable, whether it's good or not.
Yes, yes, okay, absolutely. Just to that add, is an element. That no, it. That's yeah. That's an important element. I think my understanding of the way they're defining in the beginning, generally speaking, that begins to develop and the seeds are sort of planted because of the specific cultures that we live in.
Yes.
Have a kind of way of looking at things that either are we fit into naturally, or, you know, we have to sort of fight to fit into, or we have to hide parts of ourselves to fit into. Do you know what I mean?
Well, and our self-concept is partially based on the outer world as well.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
It's somewhere in between.
It's not the only thing.
It's completely influenced, at least to some degree, by outside.
Exactly. And I agree with Jung in terms of the idea that, you know, we don't come into this world a blank slate. You know, the soul comes in with its propensities and its different desires, its likes and dislikes, and its personality traits and so forth. You know, because you can see that in babies. You know, there's babies that, you know, rush out to meet the world extrovertedly. There's ones that are a little more reserved, and there's, you know, good-natured, happy little Buddhas, and then there's, you know, holy terrors, and you know what I mean. There's mm-hmm. a range, and that's going on in infancy. So you know, obviously we have something that's innate within us already. So that's definitely that personal side of that shadow that you're talking about, So some of those things that we just, you know, believe or desire or think about ourselves that either are acceptable or aren't acceptable, you know, have nothing to do with really the society we're born into. They just kind of come with us, don't they? Right. You know, into this birth and this into this life. So, you know, one of the challenges then is to kind of to get at, you know, where those different things are, why we put them down there. You know, this is the other thing with the shadow is a lot of times people think of it in a more, you know, think of it in a completely Freudian sense, in that it's just all of our repressed stuff that we don't accept, or all the things that aren't acceptable in society, and it all gets shoved down into this sort of dirty little secrets locker. But the reality of the situation is that much of the best of who we are as individuals often gets shoved in there, right?
Right.
And that would be what might be called the gold in the shadow, as Robert Johnson puts it, right?
Just like it is in the earth, the coal, yeah. The gold, the silver, uranium, whatever thing of value. It's usually in a dark place underground. And you have to dig for it and pull it out.
Well, that too, I think, reminds me of the you know, the alchemical idea, the negredo, the black phase.
Well, alchemy, you know, it's a dark art. And dark, if we start talking, it's in the darkness, it's in the shadow, it's a cult. Make a distinction, I think, that what is occluded, what is a cult, is just what isn't seen, what is not visible either through consciousness or through other perception or eyes, ears, what do we just don't want to look at or don't want to hear. Dark arts, black magic, you know, occult operation, you know, though that's kind of a different thing. But there is a carryover, because a lot of what is, you know, occult or dark really, in a way, I think, is describing the shadow.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's interesting, too, because how fearful people are of the very word occult, when it simply means hidden.
Yes.
It means hidden. It means that, you know, hidden mysteries. You know, granted, you know, in the last, you know, 30 or 40 years, the word occult has come to mean, you know, more like satanic or or dark, or, you know, some sort of like a horror movie or something. But the original word doesn't carry any of those implications at all. But it's interesting that we see, even in the hidden, in the mysterious, we see something dangerous and dark and brooding, you know, hiding off in these dark spaces, when in reality, that energy is very much something that we need. The wisdom that's contained in the mystery is very much something that we need to live a full, you know, red-blooded sort of life, to be, you know, vitalized by life. And Robert Johnson talks about this. I love he brought up that one point where he was talking about how he was really nervous, but also lacking energy for a talk one time. And he's a pretty introverted and very even keel, kind of happy, not, I don't want to say happy, but a very, you know, kind of even and reserved person. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, by people that knew him. I never met him, but you can tell from listening to him and reading his books. And he speaks that way. This woman told him, oh, go ahead and try this thing that I do whenever I'm feeling, you know, kind of low or I don't have energy. So basically she told him, just take a big towel, you know, wet, get the towel kind of wet so that it's sort of damp and heavy, ball it up and just, you know, slam it on the ground, almost like you would do with one of those exercise balls or medicine balls, and, you know, do that, you know, a few times and scream while you do it or yell out while you do it. And he's like, this was the most foreign thing to me ever. He goes, I felt like a complete idiot doing it. And he goes, but it, you know, it roused up something in me that made me have a great talk. It put fire into my eyes and it put, you know, an energy into the talk. And that's the kind of energy we can get out of the shadow. You know, it is this sort of dark part of ourselves, but oftentimes we need that energy. And I think one of the challenges today is we so prize the light side of things, and the, you know, everyone's talking about, I'm a light bringer, I'm a light bearer, I'm a, you know, I'm positive, I love rainbows and crystals, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's all fantastic. I love that stuff. I'm all for it. But I think there's a pathology in overemphasizing the light side of things. And, you know, I've even posted things oftentimes on on Instagram where I'll talk about The Shadow or I'll talk about, you know, some challenging things. And there's always some feedback about, you should just focus on the light. You should just focus on the light. And, you know, the thing is, it's like, there's no light without shadow. There's no shadow without light. We have to remember that. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't want to get overburdened by negative things. We don't want to get overburdened by, you know, dark feelings and all of this. I'm not saying you need to live in a depressed state, but one has to acknowledge that there is pain in life, and life, the very nature of life necessitates a certain amount of struggle and pain and frustration and so on. And in order to achieve higher levels of consciousness, one has to go through that. Every teacher has said the same thing. Every great teacher, Jesus, Buddha, you know, Muhammad, you know, Rumi, you know, on and on and on and on. And, it necessitates a certain amount of struggle to get to those, higher levels of consciousness. You can't just jump immediately into, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I think that sometimes people want to ignore the sides of themselves that they don't like, or they don't want to deal with, and pretend like everything's okay. And that's not the way you're going to heal, is what I'm trying to say, I guess.
Yeah. And that's part of the function of this shadow. That's how it works, especially early on, say maybe up to midlife. Well, that's what it's for. It's great for capturing all that stuff. So you don't have to be burdened by it. The childhood traumas and disappointments and letdowns or embarrassments. There's a lot of guilt. Guilt for having done something wrong, or didn't know something. You're embarrassed in school because people made fun of you. You know, there's a lot of, we were told to shut up when you were playing and dancing. So later on, you don't play and dance because you were shamed because you did something to upset the collective. But maybe that's where some of your light is. Maybe you need to get back to singing and dancing at age 40.
Sure, sure.
But what you're saying about when people are very, well, I'm just all about the light. That's terrific. And if you're all about the light, 100% about the light, you're about halfway there, because that's about half of your entire being, you know, is the light and is the shadow. Same thing if you want to dwell in darkness and disappointment and hate and fear and shame and guilt and disappointment and regret and resentment, you know, then you're about half right too. The other half is the light half. You need to.
Exactly.
And it's, you know, it's so much about turning it up, the light, or turning down the darkness, because that's the darkness that is turned down, it's tuned out. That's the whole point of being in the shadow. It's about doing both. It's about going into the shadow and bringing that light with you, or it's about recovering something from the shadow and bringing it up out into the light. And ironically, this sense of being very light oriented, a light worker like this, that's very much a consciousness thing, like an awakening, awake, not necessarily woke up, but as the terms used today, but just very much like material science. It's what
I still
you can
don't,
see.
I got to be honest touch. With you. I do not understand. I have not done enough research on it, but I still don't quite understand what woke means. It seems like it's used in so many different ways. It's like, I'm woke to the fact that there's racism. I'm woke to the fact that, you know, I'm a spiritual being. I'm woke to the fact that the police are doing this or that. Like, I don't really get like exactly what it means. I don't mean to go off on a tangent, but I'm wondering why, like, a lot of these terms we're using these days, especially in the popular media, they become so muddled that this is why, you know, I like to do these kinds of shows, and I'm glad you wrote your blog post, is that it's good to get at the basics, you know, kind of get back to the basics again, because it, you know, oftentimes we're using words and concepts so loosely anymore that, you know, we get lost. And this is part of the, you know, the doing the work, you know, with the shadow. See, the thing with the shadow that's so interesting and why it's an important thing to focus on, not because we're trying to say, oh, you know, you need to live in, you know, in a suffering lifestyle, or you need to be, you know, digging around in all the worst parts of yourself all the time, and you've got to be mopey and negative. And that's not the shadow. The shadow is the parts of ourselves we're unaware of. Some of it is dark. Some of it, you know, needs to be there. You know, some of the, you know, violent impulses and stuff. It's good that we put them in there. They need to be acknowledged. They need to be, you know, dealt with in a positive way, but they do need to be in there. They shouldn't be out all the time. On the other hand, sometimes they need to be brought out of the shadow in order to protect ourselves or our family and so forth. So, you know, that's the reason why we, you know, we have some of these energies and so on. But my point really is this, the biggest thing about the shadow is it's the parts of ourselves that we don't really, we don't acknowledge and we don't know are there and we don't remember, I guess is the best way to put it, or we don't recognize. So that kind of brings us into this next part I wanted to talk about was how do you then, you know, recognize parts of yourself which inherently are in a place where you don't really have, you know, normal conscious access to them. You know what I mean? And that becomes a challenge. So then we've got to talk about projection, right?
So, well, if something is shoved down into the shadow,
yep.
For a period of our lives, it's probably better than we can get on with our external life and live in the world and work our jobs and do these things. And we start turning inward again. What happens? Sometimes these things will arise. It's called a Pluto crisis. So it's from the underworld. Something will happen. You'll get an injury or a divorce or this is something. And then through that churning up, these contents come out in a more mm-hmm. subtle way. They do appear in other people. Both qualities
and that's,
we like
that's
in
that
people
projection that I'm
and
talking
things
about, right?
We don't like. Yeah. If I think we've mentioned at one point, and maybe we'll do a show on this topic further.
On projection itself, yeah. That's
well, on projection, yeah. And also, you know, when you see somebody that's doing something, or maybe somebody's not, let's use the example of not acknowledgement. Somebody doesn't acknowledge the good works that you do. There's this old saying, no good deed goes unpunished. It seems like that can be the case. It's funny, but it's, you know, there's a little truth to it. It's easy to turn to the point the finger at the other person or the institution. Maybe your work doesn't give you a bonus or a promotion, or you're just not appreciated around the house for the 101 little things you do that nobody seems to recognize, much less appreciate.
Mm.
That could be a project, especially if it's something you kind of don't like about another person or institution.
Yep.
It's how am I like that with myself?
Yeah.
What part of me am I not appreciating?
Sure.
And that's, you know, that's one way to get to this. It's just to ask the question. If you see it out there, ask, well, how am I like that with me? How am I treating myself? Maybe, not quite as honorably as I want these other, because if you're not doing it, it's kind of hard to expect other people to do it too. So,
well, and if we're not doing it within our own self, it means maybe unconsciously we're even doing the same thing to other people as well that we don't like that we're seeing to that's being done to us, right?
Yeah. And they're vibing off our energy of saying, if I'm saying in quotes, but if I'm somehow behaving like I'm not acknowledging my own gifts,
yeah,
I'm also sending out a signal that says my gifts aren't worthy, whether we realize or a scent or something, you know, kind of goes out there. So
sure.
Again, it's, you know, the work is, you know, on the inside, even though it may take external actions. Well, if you want self-esteem, do an esteemable act. If you want to be respected, well, then respect others and also respect yourself.
Honor. That's
and
a
if
great
you're,
point.
You're really, and that, but it may take an outer action. You may have to say no to somebody when you're used to being a lapdog or a welcome mat or something.
Sure, exactly. And those are all ways of dealing with the shadow. So getting, you know, kind of getting back to the beginning of this, like the projection thing, just in case people are still, you know, not exactly sure what that is. So the function of projection basically is that there are all these different parts of ourselves, different things, motivations, ideas, you know, archetypes, complexes, different energies all at work within. We need something to project onto. That can be a person, it can be an institution, it can be a job, it can be the government, whatever. So we project, quote unquote, like a projector almost onto a screen. You talked about that before in one of the discussions we had. You know, these things that are within ourselves onto something outside, and we think that it's that thing doing whatever it is to us. Like, she makes me so mad. He pushes my buttons. And, you know, that may be true. They may be doing things that are annoying. But the point is that it's 99.9% of the time it's something within ourselves that's getting activated by what they're quote unquote doing, or the way they're acting, or the way that we're seeing them, due to the projection we have, which is something in ourselves that we're putting onto someone else. And it's a very, very dangerous thing. An unacknowledged shadow projection can cause things like, you know, the Holocaust. It can cause genocide. It can cause wars and, you know, gang fights and violence and, you know, and so on. Because we see out there something that we think we need to destroy, that's really something in ourselves that needs to be acknowledged and sort of rescued and healed. It's always easier for us as human beings, especially in the West, to put our problems onto something else, a scapegoat. That's another way of looking at it. And, you know, destroy that scapegoat than to deal with our own internal issues, right?
Well, it is. It's easier to point a finger. I think there's this line from the, is it New Testament? I don't know, some biblical scripture that, you know, before I smote the speck that's in your eye, you know, let me take care of the beam that's in mine. Like, if you can recognize it in somebody else, means that it's something that is calling for your, this is this Pluto crisis, you know, it's calling for you. It's saying, hey, pay attention to me, acknowledge me. And then you can ask, what do I need to do then? If whatever these trigger points are, or injustices that are seen out there, how, what am I to learn from that? How, what can I see about myself that maybe I need to do better for myself, treat unto others, right? Or how do I project out that I am somebody that is respectful and I have self-respect? The more you do that, probably the more respect you're going to get from the outside world. If you don't ask for a raise, even though you've done all the work and you've jumped every hurdle and gone above and beyond, sometimes it sends an unintended signal that, well, I don't want a raise. I'm not worthy of a raise. You know, but if you ask for something, doesn't mean you're going to get it, but it shows that you have that respect for yourself, or you're acknowledging your skills and gifts that you're bringing, that's saying, hey, I do all this. I'm worth this. Can I get a little more for it?
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. You know, but in the starting point, you know, of that, of course, is to recognize the stuff that is in the shadow, and that may be stuff that's positive as well, right? So you're recognizing those parts of yourself that do need to be acknowledged and so on, and trying to make them conscious, so that you can communicate properly with other people to kind of you know, be more assertive and get the things that you need. But you have to be aware of that first, right? And so the first step in that, I think, is noticing those shadow projections and taking them back. You know, that's a big concept in the Jungian world, is taking back the projections. And it's a challenging thing to do. Obviously, we're not going to take back all our projections, because that's how we actually navigate through life. It's not possible. You know, all of life is basically a projection onto, you know, the material world that we live in to form some sort of meaning. But you take it back in the sense that, you know, you don't, you own the stuff that's yours, and you don't own the stuff that isn't yours, you know, and that's part of sort of going through this material that's in the shadow, you know. And it, like we said, I mean, it's a difficult thing to find it, because inherently it's in the shadow. It's in a hidden place, which is why, you know, you've got to begin recognizing it in the kind of projections, the irritations, the little promptings you're getting inside about different things that are going on outside in your world. And that helps. It's like a mirror. It's like you're holding, the world is a mirror that's kind of reflecting back to you what you need to know about what's going on within you. And so if somebody like really pushes your buttons and there's no reason for it, I mean, it's one thing to have somebody cut you off in traffic and, you know, you're mad and you want to give them the finger. That's one thing. That's a motivated sort of frustration. But if you're just, you know, you've got someone at work that has not done anything to you, that's, you know, really negative or upsetting, and you just don't like that person for some reason, you really need to look at that. you know, you really need to look at that. It's like you try to figure out what it is, because it's probably some element in yourself that you don't accept, or it's something that happened in the past that you put into the shadow that you are, you know, you don't really acknowledge, or, you know, it looks like you're, you know, your great aunt Helen or something that used to beat you when you were a kid, whatever. I mean, it might be some deep, dark thing. It might not. But the point is like the only way that you recognize these shadow elements in yourself is through your dreams, because that comes up in your dreams. And then through, you know, through these projections in life and these feelings we get from the feedback when we're out in the world. Right. So.
Right. And these shadow elements, it's not about conquering them necessarily. I mean, it depends on how you define the world. It's really more, like you say, about reclaiming them.
Yeah.
And then it's redeeming them.
Yeah, exactly.
You're healing. You're actually reintegrating them. Because in some of the shamanic traditions, you talk, especially when you're talking about soul retrieval, it's based on the notion that at traumatic, whether it's embarrassing or, you know, an injury or an injustice you saw or whatever, however you get traumatized throughout your life with different things, each time a piece of your soul actually is broken off, because then you don't have to feel it. Then you don't have to feel it because it's broken off. It's not connected to your heart, but it's still floating around there. And that's in the shadow, even though they don't use those terms necessarily. But soul retrieval is to go within. And you look for these things in these chambers, and you find them, and then you bring them back with you. You don't necessarily bring back, you know, the anger and the pain and the hurt and the hate and the horrificness of this trauma when it happened, but you're bringing back that piece of you, the good piece of you that got broken off, and you almost dialogue with it. You find out, well, what is this? You know, who are you? What do you need? I'm sorry you got separated, like a family member that got separated in a war zone. And it's like, yes, we got separated, but I didn't want you in the city. I wanted you out in the country where you were safe. And then you can reunite after this thing has passed. So a lot of times, you know, what gets broken off and how it is and why it is that it gets shoved into the shadow is a response to something difficult, and this is a solution. So it was a solution to put it in the shadow, to preserve it, to protect it, or to avoid it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so in the reverse, to pull it back out, it's also a solution to then invite it back.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that kind of, you know, that dovetailing off of that, I want to talk a little bit more about the gold in the shadow. Because the thing, you know, one of the things that Jung would talk about a lot was that it was easy to get people, you know, people that were in analysis, it was easy to get them to pull the skeletons out of the closet, as it were, you know, the dark parts of themselves that they didn't like. But he goes, they would, you know, fight you tooth and nail to not reveal the gold, to reveal the positive elements that were shoved into the shadow for whatever reason. So for some reason, it's easier for us to accept these negative, dark parts of ourselves than it is to accept these sort of like God-given talents or skills or the beauty within the soul for us. You know, it's as if we're more afraid of the possibility of, you know, happiness and true joy and enlightenment than we are of, you know, wallowing around in this sort of misery or whatever. And I think that's why maybe so many people, you know, focus on the light side of things and and all of that. And I can understand that because, you know, life is challenging. So you want to focus on the positives, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's a great thing. But the other side of it is that oftentimes, you know, like we were talking about, you know, the true gold, the real enlightenment, the real, you know, the real deep conscious awareness, you know, is down in that shadow part of ourselves. And we need to kind of go down and excavate and retrieve that, you know, pull that gold out of that deep, deep mine that's within us. You know, and one of the ways, like I said, we can do that is to watch our dreams. I mentioned that briefly before. In dreams, usually, and this isn't always true, but usually, you know, everyone has unique things. More often than not, though, the shadow figures will be of the same sex as you are. and they'll either be dark in complexion or dark, you know, be wearing black clothing, or they'll literally be in shadows or coming out of shadows. Maybe they're a thief or a robber or, you know, some sort of character that's kind of sketchy. Generally speaking, the events and the symbols that are, you know, circulating around that particular character, those are some shadow elements. So if you watch your dreams and write them down, this is a great tool. You know, and people often say, well, I don't remember my dreams, or, oh, I don't dream and things like that. But if you make a suggestion to yourself, I'm going to remember my dreams tonight, and you put a pad and a pen next to your bed, you know, on your nightstand or whatever, you can do that. You can train yourself to remember your dreams, and you can write them down. And it is of great benefit to do that. Even if you don't know exactly what the dreams mean, if you write them down and start kind of working with them and dialoguing with them, maybe you sit down and do some what's called active imagination, where you'll talk to one of those figures in there, in the dream, you know, in an imaginative way. You know, you go just kind of in a relaxed state, and then you can dialogue with those dream figures, even those shadow figures. You know, the more that you do that, you know, the more it'll reveal about yourself. And you talked about that a little bit with the different parts of yourself before, and how you can do that and kind of confront those parts and try to see what they want. You know, and really the shadows, you know, it's coming to you in the dream, and it's coming to you in the projection, and it's coming to you in day-to-day life and, you know, in fantasies or whatever, and it's trying to tell you something. So if you just stop and say, hey, look, what is this feeling trying to tell me? What is this image trying to tell me? What is this particular symbolic character, you know, actually speak to it? It seems kind of weird, you know, and it seems a little, odd to have different parts of yourself, but I mean, we have to acknowledge that there are parts of ourselves in there. So when we make them more real and more tangible, you know, we can actually communicate with them.
Right.
You don't necessarily want to do that if, you know, if you're mentally ill, or, you know, you've got issues with reality to begin with. But if, you know, if you're psychologically pretty stable and, you know, and all that, that can be a really safe way to try to do that, right? To try to interact with those different parts of ourselves. Do you have anything to add to that?
Well, just even in saying that as a part of yourself, it's much different to say that than it is to say, oh, well, what am I doing? What am I thinking? Am I really a jerk? Am I, you know, whether it's this global and coloring your whole psyche with being angry. Why am I so angry? Instead of asking that, saying, okay, I'm experiencing anger. What does this angry part of me, or what does my anger, you know, what is it angry about?
Yeah.
And how can I solve that? Then it's my angry side. Or it doesn't absolve you of responsibility.
No.
But if you're consumed by it, you're not going to win, because then it well, takes you have no leverage
on
it.
Exactly. You have no leverage on it, right? It is you in totality. I am this anger, and this anger is me. But if you're
lost, yeah.
If you recognize that, you can get some leverage on it. It's a good way of putting it.
You know, and some of the things that, you know, if in case, you know, you were talking about dreams and writing them down, that doesn't always come quickly to everybody, and it can be weird. But it's a great thing to do, and I'm glad you said that, and it's a great technique to get to remember your dreams and train yourself. They're not that far under the surface. It's just the alarm goes off and the coffee pot goes on, and you know, we're off on our day, and we lose that. You have to capture it kind of in the morning, or it goes away. But as we're working on that, we can also look at myths as psychological stories, because a lot of them have something to do with the shadow. You know, Cinderella, she lived in the basement.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, where she cooked the meals and the fire to heat the house. Mm-hmm. The ashes, Cinder, you know, that was her name even.
Let me interrupt really quickly, though,
yes.
Just to say this before I forget, because I think this is important. Mythology is a huge, huge way to be able to interact with different elements and different parts of yourself, and the shadow in particular. So watch what type of mythology you're interested in, what grabs your attention, because that should give you some clues about parts of yourself that you need to actually get in touch with. Would you agree with that?
Right, right.
Okay, good. So sorry, well, yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt. I just like wanted to say That's equally as good as looking at your dreams. Look at the mythology that draws you in. Are you really interested in, you know, in the story of vampires? Are you interested in the fairy tale of Little Red Riding Hood? Do you constantly want to, you know, read stories about, you know, heroes in Greece, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. look at the themes and see where they lead you as well, and go deeply into those mythologies. Anyway, go ahead.
Because we recognize something in ourselves. That's why we like, you know, a certain movie or a type of, you know, hero in a tale. But just to, you know, continue with the list, there's the dragon that's in this cave, and it's this, you know, shadowy place, and this really dark figure that's dangerous, but it's hoarding the gold. It's hiding the good stuff. You know, so you have to go in the shadow. A lot of conquering the underworld, or Orpheus going down to rescue Eurydice, it's because part of us, the good part, she was the good part that got taken away. And you have to go down there to rescue it. So it's not just, you know, maybe a quality or a trait, but it could really be part of a really vital part of our emotional and psychological makeup that, you know, we've lost, you know, touch with maybe our softer side or the inspiration. You know, what inspired a musician to get in, you know, involved in a rock band or something when they're in high school and they just, you know, they weren't getting paid. They, you know, it was terrible, but they just did it because they have this inspiration. And then, you know, you find your 45 and it's like, I used to do that as a kid. That's, you know, that's when I was young. But maybe you've lost some of that. Maybe that inspiration. Mm-hmm. Maybe you don't have to, you know, behave like a teenager when you're in your midlife. I don't recommend it. But there's some vitality, or there's some spirit of, you know, of innocence or discovery.
Yeah,
it's like Puff the Magic Dragon. You know, these toys get put away when the boy grows up. But it's not the toy. It's the discovery, the joy. A lot of times our joy gets lost.
Yeah. You know, well, that gets shoved down into the shadow. You're right. That's a great point. And it's like things we love, things that used to really move us, things we were passionate about, things that as a child we were fascinated by and in awe of. But, you know, as we get older, you know, we kind of become world weary or maybe bitter, or or experienced, or we put those things away like, oh, that's childish. And some of the stuff is, you know, that we do put away is childish. What we need to resurrect is the childlike wonder, you know, where we're still, you know, we'll look at a ladybug and go, wow, that's amazing. That's a miraculous little being, or watch a hummingbird, or, you know, just be impressed with a plane flying by and think, man, that's incredible. That thing's flying through the air. You know what I mean? And some of these things that we just sort of take for granted, the fact that, you know, you plant a seed in the ground, you know, from a paper packet that you buy at Walmart, you plant it in some dirt and the thing grows a plant and you don't do anything. You just put some water on it. I mean, it's miraculous. When you think about it, it's like life itself, just all this stuff, the fact that, you know, we can propagate our own species and we can think and we can move through this, you know, this physical plane. Yeah, I mean, it's all of it is, I mean, it's a mystery, but, you know, because we experience it and because we bump up against it and we get pains associated with it and fears and all these different things, we tend to forget that it, you know, that life itself is rather miraculous. And again, that stuff gets shoved down into the shadow part of ourselves, and we've got to retrieve it. I love what you were saying about the dragon and the gold, and the dragon is the fearsome, you know, kind of it's the fear, really. You've got to get past the fear of going into that dark to retrieve the good and bad parts of ourselves.
There's always a threshold guardian. Yeah, the dragon, the three-headed dog, Cerberus, is there, and you have to get past it, placate it, somehow trick it. feed it so it's busy, some distraction.
Yeah, the guardians in front of the you know, the Buddhist temples and these fearsome, you know, creatures, and
bring an offering.
Yeah, sure, exactly. And, you know, also those things are designed to, you know, just like I did a post of of Kali on my Instagram, and you know, she's in this fearsome form where she's, you know, she's black and she's got, you know, skulls around her neck and she's, you know, holding these knives and everything. And, you know, and that's, you know, that's her in a sort of the form of, you know, mother, Ma Kali, death, you know, and death, but death, I mean, signifies rebirth. It signifies the death of ignorance. It signifies, you know, new growth. And so once you get past that sort of fearsome aspect of it and you integrate it, then you realize, no, this is all natural. This is all part of life. This is wisdom, you know, but you have to kind of, you have to go beyond the fear. You have to go beyond the appearance. And that's, you know, that's where the truth and the shadow lies. So, you know, that's it. And it's challenging, right? I mean, it's hard to butt up against our own fears and our own hangups. And
well, especially and if you become that. Jaded. Yeah. By how do you re-enchant the world after it's already been, you know, it's like the magic trick after they show you how to do it. Well, you're not all that impressed with the magic trick, but you have to, have to make sure you get re-enchanted with your life, fall in love with discovery and mystery and wonderment.
Re-enchantment of Everyday Life, Thomas More, is an awesome book.
Ah,
I don't know if you've read that one, but that's a little segue into that. But anyway, finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Well, and this darkness, you know, this shadow, a lot of it is asleep. We need to wake up.
Wake it up.
Yeah. Wake up ourselves. Like Buddha was asked, "Are you enlightened?" He goes, "No, I'm awake."
Yeah.
And to continue with the myths, I mean, there's the a lot of fairy tales are like that. Sleeping Beauty, to give a direct metaphor, is, and what is asleep? Beauty, innocence, love, enchantment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's asleep. And what does Prince Charming have to do? Go through, you know, this obstacle, that obstacle, the forest, the thorns and everything, because it's important and it's not easy, but
he's going into the shadow to rescue those parts of himself.
And to wake up that part of himself. Then he becomes a whole person. Yeah. It's always about becoming whole. And it's like a rescue mission. Let's, you know, maybe we can look at it a little more, if we want to look at it materially and more actively and, you know, externally. It's, we're off on a quest. Maybe that's what a lot of the quests were, the Holy Grail. It's the heart. It's this, the cup that fills up the soul.
Yeah, that's
it's not to conquer some beast out there. It's to recover. It's to bring back that which has been lost.
That's a perfect way of looking at it. And I think that, you know, I think that's one of the things that's scary. And I think where people get hung up and they even get angry when you start mentioning these darker parts of ourselves and stuff, you know, when they first enter the path of, you know, spirituality, is because it is scary. You don't want to acknowledge those parts of yourself. But the thing is, if you don't, they're much more dangerous. These parts of ourselves that are in the shadow are much more dangerous if they are not addressed and they are not faced than they are if you try to paint them with light and crystals. You know, they're very, very dangerous if you just try to dress them up and pretend like they're not there or put little, you know, fairy crowns on them, because that's not how they operate. So you've got to confront some of these parts of yourself, acknowledge them, and then you can really go on to the next level. And you kind of, you know, getting back to you know, the previous podcast that we did, we were talking about getting to a, you know, a neutral state and then really being able to go into a whole new level of positivity. You know, because you've got to sort of strip away these conceptions that you have of what goodness is and what, you know, negativity is and all of that in order to be able to reach new levels of understanding. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So that's where confronting the parts of ourselves that are in there.
Let me just pause for 1 second.
Please do. Yeah.
Even the word confronting, if we're going to make this easier, it's something that is difficult. There's no ways about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But instead of confronting, maybe it's addressing or maybe even inviting.
You know what? Let's not pussyfoot around here, because honestly, and I only say that because,
You have to face them, no doubt, but it doesn't have to be a battle necessarily. The battle is with our own fear and our own resistance.
Yes.
And
but that
all,
is
all
a confrontation that. Because you've it got is, to, at is. Some point, yeah. you've got okay. to stand up point. And say, you know, I, do you know what I mean? I'm not trying to, I'm not being critical of you when I say that, but you know, I like to round the corners and make it, you know, make it seem like, okay, we're going to be able to do this. You can do it, but there is going to be that point where at some point you're going to face something you don't want to face. It's totally uncomfortable. You don't like it. You don't want to deal with it. And it just requires, for lack of a better word, grit and confrontation. And and people sometimes don't want to admit that because it sounds like it sounds negative or it sounds like it's going to be too hard. Right. I mean, and this is where I'm saying, just trying to be a little bit of like the sort of not the voice of reason, but
it's
like,
it's a courageous act.
And, you know, it requires bravery. Yes. You've got to be a spiritual warrior. It doesn't mean you need to be bloodthirsty. You need to be a spiritual warrior. Think about it like that.
Okay.
Can we use that terminology?
Yeah, that's great.
Is that a fair way to do
for
it?
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Because that's what I mean. I don't mean confrontation in the sense like you're dominating something or you're trying to kill it, or it's a spiritual warrior facing a worthy adversary that you're going to make a friend. That's what's going on.
Wow. I think that's a,
how about that?
Might want to remember that one. And
good thing we have it on the podcast.
Okay.
So we can refer back to that. All right. Well, that's, I think, going to do it for us. We're about
50
minutes into that. It's a good, you leave them on a high note.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I say this all the time, but I always love that. I always love that episode where Jerry tells George Costanza on Seinfeld to leave them on a high note. And he goes into the meeting and he cracks a joke and gets a laugh. And he's like 30 seconds into the meeting. He's like, all right, I'm out. See you guys later. So thankfully, you know, we got a full show out before we hit our high note.
Yeah.
So we got that. Anyway, thank you so much, Chris. Great insights.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here every week, and I hope you're doing great and living a great life out there of light and integrated shadows in Los Angeles. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. Please, again, support us if you can at anchor.fm/cosmiceye. We're here every week for you on Sunday and usually on Thursday or Friday. You know, our midweek shows are kind of jump around a little bit, but we're trying to do at least two shows a week. So please join us for those. Thanks again for joining us. Have a great week. Goodbye and God bless.